Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The US Secretary of State Marco Rubio will arrive in Saudi Arabia today for talks about ending the war in Ukraine. Although he's not expected to have any formal role in the discussions, Volodymyr Zelensky will be in the region too, with the Ukrainians under significant pressure to make concessions from US President Donald Trump. Well, I'm joined now by James Waterhouse, BBC Ukraine correspondent, and Stephen Erlanger, who is Chief Diplomatic Correspondent Europe with the New York Times. And James, I'll come to you first on this. After that disastrous clash in the White House just over a week ago, will the Ukrainian side be planning a different, perhaps a more diplomatic approach to these talks?
I highly suspect so. I mean, ever since that scene in the Oval Office, we've seen MPs here, ministers, as well as President Zelensky's European allies, I think, encourage a softer, more diplomatic approach, as you put it, with the White House, because of the inescapable reason that this continent is still completely reliable on America's military might in case Russia was to try and reinvade after a ceasefire was signed. President Zelensky has repeated his stance that he will sign at any time the multi-billion dollar mineral agreement, which would give America access to a sizable chunk of future profits as part of a reinvestment program into Ukraine. But as for what's in it for Ukraine, that is still not clear or lacking. He still doesn't have the security guarantees he wants to underline any kind of ceasefire. He is proposing a ceasefire, a pause on drone attacks, a naval ceasefire in the Black Sea, large prisoner of war exchanges, if Russia is willing to do the same. But at the moment, the Kremlin is rejecting his idea, and that's been rubber stamped by the increase in aerial bombardments we've seen here over the past 3 days.
Mm-hmm. And is President Zelensky under political pressure at home to perhaps modify his approach to dealing with the United States in particular?
Absolutely. I think we saw over the last fortnight a political rallying around. I mean, even some of his staunchest political rivals have downed weapons for the greater unity of the country as they see it. It had been, you know, that had always happened in the face of Russia, but now America too. You know, it really is seen here as being vital to put on a united front and engage with America. Now, of course, this country's desire to fight in a war still seen as existential has not waned in that sense. It's seen as a binary choice. Of course, people want the war to end, and that fatigue and weariness is only continuing to mount. And so I think we're seeing President Zelensky taking the only political path he can for now in Saudi Arabia, where, yes, he's not going to be involved in these talks, but we may well get a sign of the direction of travel. But, you know, I can count on two fingers how many times Donald Trump has criticized Vladimir Putin for waging this full-scale war. He did so again over the weekend for the increase in drone attacks we have seen. But the question being asked here is, well, what is he going to be asked to compromise on in terms of territory seized off the back of Ukraine being asked to compromise on NATO membership, being asked to, you know, being told to face up to the fact that Russia can't be repelled completely from its land. So It's a big 48 hours, no doubt.
And just moving to what has happened overnight, Ukrainian troops, it seems, James, that are under big pressure in the Kursk region right now. What's been happening?
They're under huge pressure. I mean, some will remember this is a place where American troops mounted a huge surprise counteroffensive, concentrating its most elite forces last summer into Russia's western Kursk region. They seized hundreds of square kilometers in the hope it would relieve pressure on other parts of the front line and that it could eventually become a bargaining chip in any kind of ceasefire deal. But at the moment, Russian forces have almost encircled Ukrainian forces there. They've blown up bridges leading back into Ukraine itself. They have lost more than half of that territory and are being pushed back fast. So while they may now finally be drawing Russian troops, it may amount to nothing if they inevitably make a withdrawal back into Ukraine. So it's a reflection of, you know, if we're looking at Ukraine's negotiating position, the battlefield isn't going its way, the geopolitics isn't going its way, and yet negotiate it must into this week.
Mm-hmm. And that decision by the Americans to withdraw intelligence sharing, what is the impact on that in real time on Ukraine?
So that when America paused its aid, you know, the consensus here is that it wouldn't be felt for weeks because of the lag in support. But it has been fairly instant in terms of kit, armoured vehicles, ammunition being grounded in neighbouring Poland, for example. But with intelligence, you know, the scope of this pause is not yet clear. But it allows Ukraine to protect itself against drone attacks. It allows Ukraine to identify Russian troop positions. And I think, you know, take the pausing of access to satellite imagery with the company Maxar, under instruction of Donald Trump. You know, one officer here told me that it's like fighting blind because you're not able to see the terrain, what enemy movements are being carried out. And now we've seen the most latest pausing is with supporting technology of onboard radar systems in F-16 fighter jets. So, you know, I think President Zelensky will be hoping that any kind of signing this week may restore some of this support, but it's been fairly devastating if you're looking at, you know, weathering this continued full-scale invasion.
James, thank you for being with us again from Ukraine. That's the BBC Ukraine correspondent, James Waterhouse. And as I said, Stephen Erlanger is with us as well, chief diplomatic correspondent in Europe with the New York Times. And Stephen, thank you for being with us. Why do you think these talks are taking place in Saudi Arabia?
Well, Trump likes Saudi Arabia. If I were the people in Geneva, I'd feel wounded because normally this sort of thing takes place there. But the Saudis want to play an important role in the world. They're offering lavish gilded rooms for this conversation. They're not trying to intervene. They're just being hosts. And it may be useful for the Americans because obviously the Trump people are still very much engaged with trying to get Gaza at least settled or to keep the ceasefire going there. And so that's in the region too. So it may make it just easier for them to move between talks.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Russia is still continuing to advance into Ukraine. While these talks continue, of course, there are no preconditions, are there?
No, none. And if you're worried about a ceasefire, obviously what you want to do is take as much ground before a ceasefire as you possibly can. So the talk of ceasefire, I think, has forced or pushed the Russians to increase their attacks on Ukraine just at the same time, as James Waterhouse said, the Americans have been using this very harsh leverage on Ukraine by cutting off intelligence access to them, which is killing Ukrainians, but it is also forcing Zelensky to think about concessions for peace that he wouldn't have normally done.
So do you expect then that the United States will reverse their stance on military aid and intelligence once people are around the table, or once there is an inkling or a feeling that a deal may be close?
Well, I would like to think so, but I mean, these things have gradation, and the point of leverage is you use it, and then once you take it away, it's hard to put it back again. So I suspect it's going to be there for a while. I don't think the U.S. intends to keep it forever, because for Ukraine to collapse wouldn't be a good thing for Donald Trump either. I mean, you don't want to work for a ceasefire and in fact have one of the sides collapsing. So that would be too Afghanistan-like. So I think they're trying to get it right. I mean, it's an ugly way of doing business, but that's the way they're doing business.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the Russian government spokesperson, Dmitry Peskov, his most recent comments. He was saying that in the last few minutes, the United States is likely waiting to hear from the Ukrainian side that they are ready for peace. This is, in fact, he said, probably what everyone is waiting for. They also said they're not holding out for a specific or concrete outcome from the Saudi talks. So give us your view, Stephen, on how Russia is approaching this Saudi Arabia situation and these talks that are about to take place.
Well, I think the Russians are quite happy to see the Americans fighting with the Ukrainians. I mean, all the Russians have to do is sit there and watch it, just as they're happy to watch Trump making Europeans go crazy with anxiety about whether Trump wants to destroy NATO. This is all to Putin's interest. At the moment, the Russian position hasn't changed for a long, long time, which is that they say they want a permanent solution or a peace settlement before any ceasefire, not following a ceasefire. So they and Trump actually disagree, but you don't see Trump pushing them. Maybe there's some private deal that Trump feels he has with Putin, but we don't see it yet. Russia's still insisting that Ukraine be neutral, not join NATO, have limited military capacity, that there be no European or foreign troops inside Ukraine after a settlement. So these things haven't changed. So at the moment, I think the Russians are simply waiting to see how much Zelensky's willing to concede before they have to take a position.
Stephen, thank you very much for your time. Stephen Erlanger there from the New York Times. And earlier we heard from James Waterhouse from the BBC. And a little later in the programme, a former US ambassador will be telling us about that rapidly changing relationship between Europe and America. That's coming up in a little while. But next, do you book your holiday direct or use a travel agent? We're going to find out what is the best way to do it.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.